Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God."
Rescue me. I am drowning in doubt, cannot see you. Waters deep, I've been treading too long, now I'm sinking. Will you let me see if you are there? Rescue me if you are there. Comfort me as fear is dragging me down deep in the darkness. Frigid sea, my whole heart has gone cold. I know I'm dying. Will you answer me if you are there? Will you rescue me if you are there?
The story we just heard Matt read for us is one of the most well-known stories in the Bible, I think. Maybe the only other story that is more famous is the one that comes right before it, in which Jesus and the disciples feed thousands of people from a few fish and a few loaves of bread. Maybe you've heard of that story. Now, I don't know about you, but I've always imagined that scene. I see things in my mind's eye a lot, and I've always imagined it in a particular way, because it just seems so chaotic to me and unplanned. As though like Jesus and his crew were walking along and he saw some folks, this is how I imagine it, and he started talking, and then some more came around, and he kept talking, he started teaching, he heard what they had to say, they heard what he had to say, that struck a thought in his mind. He started preaching, he kept talking, and he goes on longer and longer. I'm just laughing because that's kind of what I do sometimes. Not that I'm like Jesus, but I do go long. And the disciples start looking at their watches or checking their phones, right? And they're thinking, the sun's going down, and he's still talking, and there's a lot more people, and suddenly they know what's going to happen, and it happens. He turns around and he says something like, "Hey, we got to feed these people." They knew it was probably going to happen. They weren't exactly sure. I know that they, in their own minds, probably had their own list of what they were going to do that day. But as followers of Jesus learned, where he goes and what happens can be very unpredictable. So I imagine him just turning and saying, "You good with that? Just figure this out, will you? I need to talk to these people. Just feed them." And I think he does that because he is a man who lives in the moment. He lives in the moment. He's fully present to those that he encounters. That is an interesting way to live. So then in my mind, I don't stop there. So then I imagine, you know, all that happens and they do all that and they feed all those people. And you hear he sends the disciples on away, right? He's going to go rest and pray after having done all that. But he's going to send them on to their next thing on the list. And they're in the boat. And I sort of imagine that too. And I can hear them talking. "Oh, wow, that was amazing. I think I did good. I think I did good. Don't you think I did good? I did good because I didn't stress the details too much. And I went with the flow. Do you see how I went with the flow when he told us to feed those people? I had such a different plan for our day. Didn't I, Andrew? Didn't you, Peter? You know, we were going to meet with the village elders to get a feeding program going on here. I had a presentation, had my PowerPoint, keynote, whatever. It was going to be great. You know, I've done good this way before, though. It's one of my challenges. I just make lists. I go down my list. I stay right on task with my doing good. I think I refrained from doing harm because I didn't criticize Jesus. You heard that, right? I just kept all those thoughts right inside. Kept my mouth shut. And I didn't let him know what a poor planner he was yet again. Because, you know, we could have fed so many more people if we had known this gathering was going to happen. If he had given us just a few weeks' notice, I mean, I could have gotten donations of fish and bread. Wow. And then we could have had tax deductions for those local people. We could have lined people up, done a better job, got them in and out. But I did no harm. I didn't mention it. I think I am staying in love with God right now in this boat, just realizing all the good I have done. I can hear it. I think disciples make lists, and Jesus focuses on people. How do you operate? How do you operate? Do you make lists? Or do you move from task to task as each one appears to you? Or maybe you're somewhere in between, because that's kind of two ends of a continuum. How do you move through your day or your week? How do you move through your life? We're in the third week of this series we call How Deep, and Matt shared with us in week one about rooting our lives in grace and announced our vision of a second worship gathering so that there's continued room at the table for everyone. And last week I talked about how we both hold faith and doubt like this as we seek to take a next step in faith and go deeper. And this week we're going to reflect on how we are to recognize Jesus in the faces and the lives, it's okay, of all of those around us, where we live, where we go to school, where we work and volunteer. And often we miss Jesus. We miss God, but it doesn't mean that God and Jesus aren't there. It just means sometimes we miss. So back to my question. How do you operate? For those of us who work through lists throughout the day, let me ask you this. How often does your day go according to plan? You don't have to answer out loud. That's all right. How often have you gotten to the end of the day and everything is checked off? Hardly ever, right? I know what you do. You just move it to the next day. Cut and paste. I know. I do the same. We still make lists, though, right? Even though it never happens. Is it possible that we do this with every good intention, holding hope that we're going to go about our day in a certain kind of a way? accomplishing certain things, which will in the end then make us feel as though we are successful, worthy, productive. I think that makes sense. I think it's how many of us operate, myself included, and this way is not just reserved for individuals. It's true for organizations and groups too. There are lists for churches that supposedly mean, for example, that we are doing good. If a church isn't doing those things on the list, then you really aren't following Jesus out onto the water. Advocating for the poor, feeding the hungry, providing shelter, and giving relief to those who are imprisoned. That's the church list. It's ironic that I'm questioning our use of lists when we're asking all of you to make a list in the deep carts. I know. It's not lost on me. Because it isn't that list making is a bad strategy. And that church list, advocating for the poor, feeding the hungry, providing shelter, giving relief to those in prison, it's a solid list. And we could spend a significant portion of our time thinking about ways as a church to do this, creating ways, implementing those ways. But at the end of the day, if we don't know why we're doing any of that, then it seems like a questionable way to practice our faith. And Matt's going to say more about that in a few minutes, because we really want to be as clear as we can. But I want to bring us back a little bit about how we go about our day. There's a woman named Sue Bender, and she wrote a book called Everyday Sacred. I've appreciated that book over the years, and in it she gives us a different image than a list. She gives us an image of a bowl to use in going about our day. Not just any bowl, it's a begging bowl. There's a tradition, a monastic tradition, in which each day a monk holds a bowl not unlike this and goes about his life. And whatever is placed in the monk's bowl will be the monk's food. Whatever liquid is placed will become his drink. And Sue Bender, in part, came to this image. She learned about it from reading the French playwright, a man named Jean Genet, who said his aim was to live his life like a monk, holding a begging bowl, and trusting life to fill his begging bowl with all the nourishment that he needed. You can see, a begging bowl really gives us an opportunity to trust and be open to what each day is going to offer us. Open to God, who is full of infinite surprises. Opening to maybe what we're not seeing as we hurry about our day. Open to, who am I walking past? Open to, what am I taking for granted? Open to, what people are being placed right before me? How can each item being placed before me become a teacher for me in my desire to go deeper in faith? Well, and there's a way to me that Jesus is really like a monk holding a begging bowl, because he fed thousands of people because he joined them. He happened upon them. He loved them. He felt their hunger. And he realized in that moment, whoa, these people need to eat. They need a meal. We just need to sit down right now and break bread together, recognize our connection one to another and to God. There's a writer named Frederick Buechner who reminds us that the place God calls you is the place where your deep gladness and the world's hunger meet. So do we make lists in order for our deep gladness to meet the world's hunger, or is it more like we make lists so that the world will pat us on the back and say we're efficient and successful? And if we do that, is it really such a bad thing? I don't really think it's bad. It just may not be an act of faith. That's all. Because when we allow ourselves to be present, we notice the needs around us and we reach in love. When we allow ourselves to be present, we take time to pray and witness to what it's like to be in the boat. Because see, right after that, you get in the boat, you have your kitchen table, you're talking, and there's Jesus coming towards you, inviting you not to stop there, but to walk out on the water. And it would be great if we didn't have our heads down checking things off our list, but that we had our faces up with our bowls out, right? Because then we at least have a chance of seeing him. Think about what it would be like to allow God to fill up our bowl, our life, when we hold it up like this. Accessible. You know, our chest is up. Think about what it would be like to go about our lives in that way. Think about what it would be like to notice thousands of people that are really, really hungry. If you've been through Blueprint for Discipleship, you've heard this story before, but I'm going to say it. At the end of the book, the author, Kevin Watson, gives us a challenge. And he says, now that you've read this book and studied the method and methodism, don't pick up another book. Put the book down and go do it. Go do it. It's our tendency to keep studying and getting book after book, reading and getting smarter and smarter, and we just keep stacking those books up, and they look really cool, and we can check off that list. I've read that. I've read that. I know this. I know that. And then pretty soon, you know what? It's so tall, you can't see around the stack. Reaching in love is what we do when we put down the book and look up and recognize the needs of our neighbors every day. And historically, churches have tried to make this happen, and that's a really good thing. But there are ways in which I wonder whether we end up missing the boat by relying simply on the church. And the example we give in Blueprint is that a church decides to do a project, say, and we decide to do something nice and good for others, and we want to help them, and out of a community of, say, about 200, about 20 participate. And when that happens, the church gets to say, see, we're reaching in love. 20 of us did that. But what if we shift our thinking on that? And what if we hold out our bowls and say, my whole life, actually, is reaching in love? You all may or may not know this, but right now in this room, we have teachers and nurses. We have students. We have musicians. We have craftspeople. We are attorneys. We are physicians. We are social workers. We are nannies. We are baristas. We are counselors. We are administrators. We are all of these things and more. We are retired people who have a lot of unstructured time. We are stay-home moms and dads, some of us, who have time to volunteer. We are all of these things and more and more. And in every single one of our lives, we can see, if we look, the needs of our neighbors and do something about it. I want to tell you about one person who shared something in her life that happens at her workplace. She shared it with me this week. She trains folks on methods. And we all know that when we learn new things, that can be challenging, right? And we also know that in many workplaces, there's a culture. It's a culture with a name. It's called gotcha. I'm going to do everything I can to point out all your mistakes. And then maybe if I find enough of them, I'm going to write you up, just so you know just how wrong you are and how right I am. Right? A lot of us live and work in those cultures. So this person among us, when she is training people, because she's training them to do new things, Part of her training is to say, and let's all give each other grace in this. Grace. Let's just extend grace to ourselves and each other as we move forward in a new thing. Now, that may sound like a small thing. But first of all, to use that word grace, that's a new word for many people outside of the church. And for your training person in your workplace to use that in an instructional way about how you're to treat one another, that's risky and prophetic. That's a way of reaching in love with our language. She uses the word grace on purpose. Who would have ever thought that simply using the word grace in a sentence at work would count as reaching in love? See, getting out of the boat is an invitation. It's not an impulsive thing. It's an invitation by Jesus. Walking on water needs to be on all of our lists. Where and how is God calling you to reach in love and walk on water every day? Stepping out in faith happens, see, when we hear the invitation of Jesus and we dare to go out there with him. And if we don't quite make it all the way, you heard the story. He's going to save us from drowning one way or another. Our teenagers meet on Sundays after worship in their own kitchen table, and they're trying to walk on water. They know that we have a homeless population in Sacramento. And it's a challenge to find ways to help this population. And as a church, we choose to reach in love by participating in something called Winter Sanctuary. And this is a ministry in which churches all over our city open our buildings to become dining rooms and bedrooms and yoga studios and movie theaters for our temporary guests. It's not a project of a few, because we could not pull it off. There are jobs for everyone, and huge numbers of us here in this community, as well as others, volunteer. And our teenagers have asked us to reach in love to this group in an additional way now. Knowing that they will be housed here, and knowing that that's coming after Christmas, they're asking us to start thinking ahead and to just collect some shampoo and conditioner and shower gel and toothbrush, toothpaste, things like that. If we bring them to church starting next week in a basket that they'll have out there, they'll do all the rest. But they can't do it by themselves. They can't reach in love in that way. And they're learning how to ask others to join in to their small band of people. You see, John Wesley said, great, who's the founder of the Methodist Church, John Wesley said, expect great things from God and attempt great things for God. When we say yes, we set in motion an adventure that will leave us forever changed. And if you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. You can't walk on water sitting in the boat. Hopefully, some of you have noticed our changing table as you enter the sanctuary. Actually, a lot of you have. We have collected on that changing table lots of diapers and wipes. And this came out of one among us who walks on water at Planned Parenthood with teen moms. And she helps them by facilitating their support groups. And the girls, it's called Teen Success. And the girls who participate in Teen Success agree to stay in school and not have a second child over the period of time that they sign their contract. And they have a phenomenal rate of success with these young women. There are limited resources, though, that are available for the women to run these groups. And that's why, as Tessa, who's in a kitchen table and comes to worship a lot, came up with an idea. And she pitched it to us some months ago. If they didn't have to buy diapers and wipes, you guys have heard me say this, they could have money instead to get bus tickets to get to school. And to have to choose between going to school and buying diapers for your kid, I had three, I want the diapers. It's really hard to make that kind of a choice. And so we've responded and we've given, I think, close to over 4,000 diapers Well, now we're getting close to Christmas. And we want these teen moms and their babies to receive at least a gift. And so today we're inviting you to give generously, and there are special tags in the back this week, and there'll be some more next week. And if we need some more, if we haven't done that, there'll be the week after that until we have tags for all of our teen moms. It's close to 60. And we want them to have slippers and pajamas for their kids and a book and maybe a toy. And we want to be specific, so there's like actual sizes on there. Because that's what we do for our babies, right? We know their sizes. And our hope is that you'll choose a card and give a gift to one of our moms and her child. Now, here's the thing. We've been giving already diapers and wipes. And Tessa takes those, and some of you help her, and they disperse them to all these small groups. And these girls, they want to thank us. And I'm saying, we don't need to be thanked. What we need is for our generosity to ignite the fire in others so that they do the same. We don't need them to write us thank you notes. We reach in love to others so that they then will in turn reach in love. So I said, nah, we don't want thank you notes. So she went back to them. But guess what they're going to do? They're going to make cookies for Winter Sanctuary. And they're excited about that. They're excited about being part of reaching in love. They become part of our effort and the effort of our city to reach in love, to offer food and shelter to our neighbors in need. You see, just as the risen Jesus refused to stay in the tomb, so the Christ of our faith refuses to live only in our church sanctuaries, in these little walls on Sunday mornings. Jesus was raised from death to life, and that life is everywhere all around us. And life was coming straight to Peter and the rest of those disciples across the water into the boat. And when Jesus comes to us, he often appears in unrecognizable forms. Teen moms. Who would have thought? And the disciples, having just left him, just then, after that massive reaching in love effort, already didn't recognize him. They're caught up in their fear and their self-reflection and their anxiety about the storm and the wind, everything that's going around them. That's what happens to us too. We are more intent so often to cross things off our list with our heads down like this, instead of being present in our lives. And we can't reach in love when we're like this. But we can when we're like this. So what might God be able to do with our generosity? What might God be able to do? Matt's going to talk to us a little bit more about this.
One of the ways that we as a church community try to open our own lives and our stories to God and to follow in the ways of Jesus, to take that risk to go out of the boat and onto the water, is to make some commitments about how we're going to live our lives together. And for people who've been in historic churches, this might seem really strange. And for many of our folks, you've never been in a church. So just think of this as normal. This is what we do. And it's to make a commitment around four areas. It's how do we hope to root our lives in grace? How do we long to grow in faith? And we grow in faith. It might be for you taking that next step next week and being baptized. It might be joining a kitchen table or going through Blueprint that starts in a couple weeks. Or maybe you find yourself going through the motions in a kitchen table and it's time to let go and to be a little bit more vulnerable and listen to where God might be calling you. We would like for you to write down some of your hopes for yourself. And Linda and I take those and we craft worship together for the next year about how we're going to continue to grow in the ways of God's love. As we've talked about today, reaching in love, what is that going to look like in your own life? Who are the people around you that as you hold that bowl up, you're going to notice? And what is it going to be like for you to be present with them, to share a meal, to break bread, to walk on water with them? And how will you give generously to support the ministries of our church? I want to take a moment to share a story. And the story is about, his name is Ben. But his full name is Benjamin Lawrence O'Brien. And Linda and I had We were able to be present for his memorial service earlier this week, and Ben lived to be 99 years and 1 week. And he is one of the most beautiful, stunning, inspiring people I've ever encountered in my life. He's an attorney, and he came to be a state and a federal administrative court judge. Ben was the embodiment of generosity. When he first started to make it as an attorney, he went to Congressman Voorhees, who he had interned with as a student, and he asked if he could really make all this money and still do good. And Congressman Voorhees looked back at him, because Ben wondered, is all this money going to taint me? Is it going to taint me? And Voorhees said, well, what do you plan to do with it? So Ben started to talk about his priorities and his faith. He talked about holding up that bowl and trying to be present to all that was around him, ways that he wanted to reach and love. And Congressman Voorhees said, make all you can and then give all you can. That's how John Wesley talked about it too, is make all you can, save all you can, and give all you can. Ben's life was rooted in grace, and he was constantly growing in faith in ways that inspire me. He would come here for worship one time a month. And about 4 years ago when we started to gather, and he would sit right in about the third or fourth row. He was so intentional the way he'd walk down the aisle, partly because he was 95 or 96, but partly because he was completely present with everyone that was around him. And he wanted to say hello. He wanted to hear your story. After worship, he would always give me this huge hug and a kiss. And he'd offer these short, phenomenal stories that took me back to the Great Depression and to the New Deal. See, when Ben was asked what he was committed to, it was to politics, and it was to changing the world through that. He was a proud New Deal Democrat, and he was convinced that this would be a way forward for us. And he was convinced that the ways of Jesus could help him get there. And so he held both of those and committed his life to that. When Linda and I started here at the table at Central UMC just over 4 years ago, we had about 25 or 30 people that would be here on a Sunday morning. And Linda had gone from an established church where she made $70,000+ and took about a 40% pay cut to come and to be part of this as a pastor. And I remember we had to cut our administrative assistant because we just didn't have enough resources. So I was opening the mail one day, and there was a check in very frail handwriting. There was an envelope, and I opened it up, and it's a check for $125. It was from Ben O'Brien. And it just said in the memo line, for whatever Linda needs. And so I celebrated and wrote down a list of, wow, this is phenomenal. If this comes in every month, like, this is great. And Linda just cried. We have different ways of moving in the world. And the next week, another envelope arrived. And we opened it up. And they kept coming every single week. This man who believed in the depths of his soul that God can do a new thing, believed in you guys sitting in these pews, and believed in us that resurrection could take place in this very space. And he kept putting his money where his hope was. See, his passion, and his passion is where he tried to invest. And I don't know what your passion is, but that's one of our hopes, is that you'll reflect on that. And maybe part of it is here at the table, and you'll look a little bit like Ben, and you'll start to send in some of those checks. But maybe your passion is something totally different. And what you need to start to do is to align your resources to reach and love in those kinds of ways. That was the kind of person that Ben was. And my hope is that some people will be in this room this morning who'll be like he was in his late 20s and young 30s, and they'll say, can I be good, or will it taint me? And that we'll find ways to use it to reach and love. Some of us, though, wish we could be in Ben's place, because the truth is we're in a boat that feels like it's sinking, and we don't have the financial resources to make ends meet this month. Some of us are in that place, and we're afraid. And that's real. One person in our church community wrote to us this week, last week, and said, I'm not able to make my deep commitment for 2014. It hasn't gone as I imagined. I was hoping that it would go this direction, but I've changed work, I've purchased a home, and I'm in over my head. My boat is sinking. When you write these things down, we're not making a list to hold us in this place, but to lift up the ways that we're being present with God. And so we celebrate that we keep coming back to one another, recognizing that we're in this together. She has that reality, and another person may be able to extend themselves beyond that. See, last Sunday, a group started to do that. Our new administrative assistant is the iPhone 4. We got it a couple of years ago, and it sits in the office, and I was checking the voicemail on it earlier this week, and one of the people from a recovery group that meets here, I think it's Monday night or Tuesday night, they've been meeting here for years, and the voicemail said, we've met there for years, and you've never raised the rate on us, so we're unilaterally self-imposing a rate increase. And so they started to do that. And it almost offsets what this person who's not able to extend herself in that way does. Because that's what church is. That's what it's like to be in a boat and to step out of it and to risk walking on water. And so I want to close with this prayer, this poem that Ben wrote in 1935 in a prominent Christian magazine called The Christian Century. Ben wrote, "I stood by a road along which humanity traveled. The weak were there and the powerful, the rich and the poor, the good and the bad, all traveling the same road and all going the same way. Yet the powerful helped not the weak when they were in distress. And the good disdained the bad and the rich saw not the poor, although they were side by side. I stood by a road along which humanity traveled, and there were neither rich nor poor, good nor bad, weak nor powerful. All were simple folk, simple, yet possessing the knowledge of eternity. And as they went down the road, they went together, hand in hand." So may that road, may that walking on water lead us to this table of new life.
Christ be with me, Christ be for me, Christ behind me, Christ within me, Christ below me, Christ above me, Christ.